Hello and welcome to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. We talk a little bit about the pros as well, but this is the place to be for college esports and sometimes a little bit younger too. We're always getting the best assists from the guys out at the UNLV studio. That's Daniel Agbuya and Jacob Brothers. How you guys doing?
How's it going, guys?
Doing pretty good.
That's right. So let's get right into it. The Compton Unified School District is getting a massive endowment from the San Diego Chargers to start and foster an esports tournament and career program. Now, this program is supposed to be around $25,000 that the Chargers are giving to the Compton School District, and they're going to be running an Overwatch tournament. One of the cool things about this is that not only is this going to be a competition, but it's also going to involve career advancement and career mentorship. To participate in the program, there's going to have to be a brief orientation where the high school students are going to have to go through that orientation, and will also have access to a game design course, a college level game design course, free of charge just for participating in the program. Now, this is going to be done hand in hand with their STEAM based initiatives to help kids in the Compton area be exposed to game development, game design, as well as other STEAM and STEM based jobs. So, guys, I want to bring you in on this discussion, talking about what's going on down at Compton, down with this school district, and the San Diego Chargers. How do you guys feel about this? Because I think this is a really cool way for professional sports teams to come in and begin to support esports.
Honestly, I think this is a very noble cause. Encouraging STEAM skills, you know, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, you know, it's something that it's really important to instill in these high school students. And the fact that we're doing this in Compton, the Compton School District, which has a reputation of, you know, dropouts and stuff like that, that fact that they're encouraging kids to learn more through video games is just really well done, you know, to me.
And then the arts was recently added to this, right?
Yes. Used to be STEM.
Okay, cool. My immediate takeaway from this story is that LA teams are kind of the only teams that have really touched on esports. Like, as far as, like, Overwatch League goes, from, like, what I've noticed.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, this is the Chargers' first outing, I believe, with esports. But the Dodgers have done stuff.
The Rams have done stuff. Yeah.
And I think that LA is setting a really good example for what other big organizations should be doing. And because I know, like, when you have, like, Philadelphia, you have a lot of big teams with, like, owners or mutual owners of teams and or teams of multiple leagues. Mm-hmm. The fact that they're not really crossing over is a little odd to me.
Yeah.
But it is cool to be involving, it's like a common theme from last week, involving like even lower than college, like high school esports. It's cool that that's finally getting a lot more spotlight than it was even a year ago.
This is where, like, you know, the dam is broken. So we're now seeing everyone is now getting into it. They're seeing the opportunities and they're just taking advantage of that. And it's wonderful to see.
Yeah, I think so.
So how do you guys feel about the inclusion of the free college game design course? Because I think that's a really, really interesting incentive for these kids, because of course you can set up a competition and you can set up teams and leagues and all that stuff, but this is a really interesting way to get them involved in the back end of game development to begin with. So how do you guys feel about that being included in this program?
I think it's fantastic because you know, all these kids are, I'm sure some of these kids are very excited to play the video games, but there's going to be those people like, you know what, I like video games, but I want to learn more about making them. And this is going to be the perfect opportunity to really see the behind the scenes of development.
Well, I think interesting is the right word, because in years past, if you were doing game design, it was, you know, you did coding.
Yeah.
Or you went through conventional avenues for game design. And now, especially in modern day, when everyone's playing games regularly, getting interested by playing games is the more common interest path. And now you can use that interest to get into game development. So I think it's a different way of moving people into game design, and I think it's a more effective way to move people into game design
Definitely.
Yeah, I too think it's really interesting and really cool. But we're going to move on from that and talk about a big tournament that just got underway this week. It is the Rocket League the Collegiate Rocket League League. I don't know. That's some weird branding there. But the League is definitely underway. It's going to be going until November 9th, and there's two conferences. It used to be four last season, but now there's only two. 16 schools per conference. We're going to have East and West, and there are some big schools involved in this tournament, guys, for Rocket League. You're going to have Michigan, Akron, Ohio State has two teams, Penn State, Rutgers out in the East, and in the West, you have LSU with two teams, Arizona, Cal Poly Tech with three teams, Utah with three teams, Mizzou and Nebraska. Those are just some of the teams involved in that. And here's another thing that's really cool about the Collegiate Rocket League scene is that this is a very accessible esport. You don't need much, you know, coaching, or you don't need much time watching it to understand the concept. It's two cars, or three cars in this case, a ball, two nets. It's car soccer. You don't need much explanation for this. And so five matches went down over the weekend, and it was Akron beating out Rutgers in the East, U of M beating out Rochester Institute of Technology, Waterloo beating Rowan University, LSU over Mizzou, Arizona beating UT Arlington. And so moving forward, we're going to be following this league very closely. It's a league that's going to have a lot of interest in it, and we're going to hopefully be able to talk to some of the players and some of the coaches from this league, because it's going to be really cool. Now, guys, I'm not sure if you followed a little bit of Rocket League, but moving forward, is this a league you guys are going to be interested in?
Especially now that they've kind of smoothed things over from the their lack of qualifiers like 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. that we talked about last week. It's good to see them finally kind of organized. They got the teams all set up. Norris, I'm going to call you out here. What state was that, though? What school was that Buckeyes from?
Listen, I'm not about to do this with you. I'm not about to do this. Yes, Ohio State has two teams.
I believe
but that's
it's called
because
the
they
Ohio
need
State?
To double their no chances. Way. They need to double their chances to win. U of M only needs one team, all right? And they're going to go all the way. I support my team. U of M going all the way, baby. That's point blank period, man. We don't need multiple teams.
I'm rooting for Listen. The Ohio State just to spite Norris.
And my family's from Ohio. You're way more aggressive about it than I am. I mean, I do think it's a little odd how some of these schools have multiple teams in there. Because I know, like, for, like, Overwatch Varsity, they do different things to kind of get around that. Where, mm-hmm. like, in the preseason, you can have multiple teams, but yeah. in, like, the Varsity Series, you can't. So I think it's a little weird for, like, a league to have multiple teams. Because then that does make it more likely for that school to win.
I mean, look at Cal Poly Tech in Utah. Three schools.
Yeah.
Three
so that seems a little odd. But beyond that, this is a league I have an interest in because Rocket League is so popular right now. And even if you know nothing about it, it's just hitting a ball into a goal with cars.
Yeah.
Like, it's very easy to wrap your head around.
Yeah, and here's the thing is that that can be a little odd, but it is not unprecedented in the world of esports. I mean, you've had, you know, I believe it was Samsung who had two teams in Korean Overwatch at a certain point that were both performing very well. So it is not completely unheard of to have, you know, Utah Red and Blue or Cal Poly Tech Red and Blue. It's not totally unheard of.
And not just
and especially
esports,
as esports.
Because you got, if you look at college debate teams, it's not very, it's very uncommon to see like multiple representatives for each school.
I mean, it is, but, you know, in terms of esports, it's not uncommon. And definitely as, you know, we continue to see a lot of programs that maybe have chosen not to field Rocket League teams, which at this point, I don't see why you wouldn't. But every school is not going to have a Rocket League program, so I understand it. But I agree with the concept that I would like this to expand in the future so we don't have to have multiple representative teams from certain schools. So moving on, University of California, Irvine, UCI, they have a scholarship coming out. Now, this is a PSA for everybody who doesn't know. You have to October 8th. To apply for this scholarship, you could go in. It is a esports scholarship. They're going to have tryouts. They have five varsity spots, and they have five JV spots, okay? So if you guys are out there and you are in UCI and you want that scholarship or thinking about going to UCI, this is something you need to do. You need to be a part of this. You need to go and try out for that team. And really one of the best programs out there in the country. Now, guys, you know, do we know what sports these are? You know, do we know what games they're going to be playing? Or is this an open tryout, an open call for any of their esports?
Yeah, so this is going to be for their League of Legends team.
Oh, okay.
So how that works is when you apply, you let them know what role you like to play, who you like to main, and more about yourself. And if they like you, they'll invite you in for tryouts. They're going to happen all throughout October. and they'll be having their coaches watching. You'll be playing against other collegiate teams, and if they're fit, if they think you're a good fit for UCI, that's when they invite you for one of those five spots.
Now, October 8th is going to be the time limit to apply, but they are going to be having tryouts, as Daniel said, all throughout the month. And just so we put it out there, that is going to be a $6,000 scholarship for a varsity spot, a $1,000 scholarship for a JV spot. Now, even though that may not sound like a lot, we all been to school. We all know, hey, $1,000 helps you pay for books, helps you pay for a lot of stuff going on, you know, when you're going to school. So don't shirk at the fact that it's a small amount. Try it out. And hey, who doesn't want to make $1,000 for just going out to play video games? But we are going to be back here with more from Checkpoint XP on campus. We're going to, of course, be talking about the Overwatch League Grand Finals, as well as what's going on in the Call of Duty Global League. So stick around with us. More coming from Checkpoint XP on campus. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. We talk a little bit about the pro scene as well, but we also want to hear from you guys. If you are in an esports club or on an esports team at any college across North America, we want to know what's the hottest going on your campus. Do you have a player that's killing it in Rocket League? Do you have a massive, massive jungler coming out of your school in League of Legends? We want to know. Let us know who the top players are, what the top stories are, and how you guys are faring in the world of esports. You can slide over to checkpointxp.com and go to that on-campus tab and let us know what's going on. But we are going to pivot a little bit and talk about the Overwatch League Grand Finals, which I got horrendously wrong, and I will be the first to admit. So, Daniel, I know you were heavy on the shock, so come on, bring it on. Bring it on.
I actually kind of feel a little bad, Norris, because I was being generous when I said shock in five. I was not expecting a full-on sweep of the Vancouver Titans. I actually started to feel a little bad, for real.
Yeah, I mean, I was traveling while the game was going on, so I was only able to catch the final game, and then I went back to see what happened after the fact. And when I opened it up, and I was like, yeah, they're leading 3-0, and I watched about 2 minutes of that game, I was like, oh, I see how this entire series went.
Yeah.
Like, it's... the shock just kind of did what made sense. You have the Titans, who have a good Doomfist player, and they have a good healer.
Yep.
Shut down the Doomfist player, shut down the healer, you're going to win. And if you can't stop a stationary hero, that's just kind of
That's the biggest thing to me, is that when you saw how they deployed the Bastion, yes, they were, you know, the Chandelier Bastion and all this stuff, it was somewhat creative, but at the same time, Bastion can't move to deal majority of his damage.
Yes.
And the fact that the Titans couldn't figure that out just let me know that, you know, that was a team that had been completely outplayed, completely outmanaged, completely outcoached, and the Shock were able to win out at every facet of the game. Not one map looked close. Not one map looked even competitive. And particularly, there was a play on Eichenwald that I really loved, where Choyobin is you know, playing the back line a little bit, protecting his healers, and a flank from Xiaomin Su from the Titans is supposed to come in. He's got Death Blossom ready on Reaper. And they completely didn't bait out the Absorb. They just went in willy-nilly, and Choyobin is able to go in and absorb the entire ultimate. And from that play, Xiaomin Su's dead. They go on and cap the point. And that was a map that Vancouver should have won. But they didn't. Why? Because they played impatiently. Because they played like a team that just didn't want to lose. And the Shock played like a team that wanted to be champions.
And not to give, I want to give credit where credit's due. Sinatra showed why he was the MVP this year. I mean, his Doomfist was just amazing to watch. It was a thing of beauty. I think it was like the first map. He had that near part and team wipe. It was just, oof.
Yeah, no, the main takeaway that I had from the playing to win and not playing to not lose is the Shock, they swapped out players every single game.
Yep.
And now like 90% of Overwatch League teams, they only swap out players when they're losing. And so for a team to be up 3-0 and they're still swapping out their DPS, shows that they're swapping them out because they are as good as the whole roster. Yep. They're playing with a roster of essentially, you know, eight or more. While most teams, it's like, oh, we have backups and this isn't working, so we're going to take you out for the day. And so the fact that the Shock could consistently be like, oh, these players are built for these maps, so we're going to bring them out for these maps, and to constantly dominate, it just made it harder for the Titans to lock down a strategy as these players play differently. But it also shows that they have a roster that's capable. And the depth is what really, it was more of a flex, really.
I think this Shock is not going to hold the standard for the rest of the Overwatch League, especially for next year as they start rebuilding. They're going to see what the Shock did. They're going to see, oh, they started, you know, rotating players out like on when they're in the lead. And they're going to, I think that now teams are going to start, like, they're going to build up their depth now.
Rotating rosters is going to be a big topic. Because even like last year, when London 4-0 swept, they still had people like Rascal, who is now on the Shock. But they had players that they could pull out for different maps. And even though it wasn't as important back then, it was still more depth than what Philadelphia had in that final.
Yes. Well, it's definitely going to be incredibly important when you have home and away and travel being brought in as a factor for the Overwatch League. Most definitely having a team you're able to swap in and out is going to be an incredible factor. But that's all for the Overwatch League Grand Finals. We want to hear more from you guys. Were you disappointed or were you completely lit that San Francisco was able to completely dominate the Vancouver Titans? Let us know, checkpointxp.com or any of our social medias. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, checkpoint_XP on Instagram. Now, coming up, the big brain, Jacob Brothers, is going to let us know all about the Overwatch Varsity Series. So stick with us for more Checkpoint XP on campus. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. And Jacob Brothers is going to walk us through the latest in the Overwatch Varsity Series. So, Jacob, what's happening, man?
Let us know what's happening here, Professor.
That's right. It's me, your boy, Big Brain, here to talk about the Varsity Series qualifier number two. And so we're done with qualifiers now, and the two teams that come out on top was Rutgers and Winthrop.
Okay.
And what was interesting, because usually what I do is that I'd see who came out on top, and then I'd compare it with Varsity Series of last year. Not Championship Series, because this is Varsity-related.
Yeah.
But both of these teams didn't play in Varsity Series last year. Yeah.
Did they just not qualify, or did they not get
their own? Well, no, because they had just played in the other branches. Or actually, sorry, Rutgers did. We'll get to that. But what had happened is that Rutgers did end up going to the playoff finals of the series last year, and they lost in the semis.
Okay.
So Rutgers was a big school to now be playing again in the Varsity Series, but kind of similar to the teams we talked about last week, they are basically a new team. Like, they kept, like, three of their players, and then their overall size grew from 6 to 9, but it was still basically a new team. So obviously they have the coaching and resolve to keep up with that kind of reputation.
Mm-hmm.
And they also only dropped two maps. So like our championship teams from last qualifiers, they only dropped two maps, both before quarters, so pretty dominant. But Winthrop, which I thought was a more interesting story, is that they only dropped one map, which is cool.
That's still pretty impressive.
Good for them.
Yeah.
But when I went back to look at what was going on with, like, their history, it turns out that they have never played in the tournament before.
Whoa.
Because Winthrop's esports program just started in April.
Well, you're telling me that these guys started in April, and now they've made the qualifiers for the Varsity League.
Yeah, this was their first outing as an esports program for Overwatch. They may have already shown up in League of Legends by now, but for Overwatch, this was their first outing. And so to only drop one map with a team of all new players, it was a pretty big standout.
Wow.
And then when I did some more digging, the coach of the program, Josh Sides, he was the founding coach for the St. Ambrose's esports team.
Oh, okay.
Which was a team that we talked about last week, who lost in a round of 16. But St. Ambrose was also like one of the final eight for Varsity Series last year. So this coach founded two programs.
Two winning programs.
Yeah. And so Winthrop might be kind of the biggest wild card because there's not much to compare to from like previous seasons. So they might be one of the bigger players, and I'm personally most interested in them because this is their, like, proof of an esports program series.
So, you know what? I think this is a really cool and interesting thread that you've discovered with the coaching, because how many times have we seen in traditional sports where you'll have a coach, you know, like a Larry Brown, who's almost sort of like a mercenary himself, where he's able to go to a team, you know, maybe build something from the ground up or take a team that's already established and really take them to the next level through his coaching. So seeing Josh Sides be able to go from not one but two brand new programs and able to push them forward in Overwatch, I think, is incredibly immense, and that's really, really awesome to hear.
Yeah, it's incredible, and we're only going to start seeing it more, right?
Yeah.
Like, the more coaches are going to show up, and they're going to move to more schools and more programs. And so being a good coach is going to be as important as being a good player.
So what happens now? So is this the first round of qualifiers, or is it like, are teams now set?
So there was only two rounds of qualifiers. So qualifier one, qualifier two are now done. Mm-hmm. So now it's going to be the Invitational, which there's still not a bracket out for that.
Okay.
So we still don't know who's playing who. And the main season, what we talked about, or what they're calling it in TESPA, is the second chance bracket, mm-hmm. which was all the teams that played in the qualifiers but didn't finish top two.
Okay.
So, and those are both going to start on October 5th, and then I believe it's just weekends after that through probably early November.
Until we have our final roster set for the playoffs.
Yeah,
okay,
that's right.
Well, that sounds absolutely amazing, and it sounds like a lot to keep track of, so we appreciate everything that Jacob is able to do in order to make sense of all this, because there's a lot of schools involved and a lot of games to be played. But again, we always want to hear from you guys. We always want to hear from the Collegiate Overwatch fans and the Collegiate Overwatch players. You know what? Also, let us know what your experience from your coach has been like. Do you think if your coach was able to leave your school, could they go and coach some other team to massive amounts of success in the far reaches of America? I don't know, but we would love to find out about it. But we got more coming up on Checkpoint XP on campus, where we're going to explore all the cities that have been confirmed for the Call of Duty League. So stick with us. More from Checkpoint XP on campus. Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus, your number one resource for collegiate esports. Don't forget to slide on over to our website, checkpointxp.com, where you can get all sorts of amazing swag. You can get shirts, you can get cups, you can get hats, all the wonderful stuff that you can use to make sure you let your friends and family know that you are part of the Checkpoint XP squad. But we're going to slide back over to the UNLV studios, where one of our managing editors, Kevin Kelly, and also the 100% expert on Call of Duty, is going to let us know what's going on with all the confirmed cities for the Call of Duty League. So, Kevin, welcome in.
It's our Call of Duty captain, Kevin.
Thanks for having me, guys. What's up?
So, you know, we got the story about all the cities that have been confirmed for the Call of Duty League. So, you know, how do you feel about this, and what are all
the cities?
You
want me to list them out here?
Go ahead.
Yeah, they are Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, Florida, London, Minnesota, New York, Paris, Seattle, and Toronto, and as usual, two LA teams. I want to give a quick condolences to Jacob, because Detroit still has no esports team.
Pour one out for my man.
Give me condolences, too. I'm in Detroit. Give me condolences, all right? I'm sad that we don't have a team still.
Well, you see kind of a pattern here. You see, with the Overwatch League and now the COD League, you're hitting all the major markets here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you want to make sure all the bases are covered for those, for the teams, or for the regions and areas that have, you know, large sports fan bases already built in. And what I think the whole city-based model is about is trying to, you know, get that to, you know, get, you know, fans of the Lakers and the Clippers, fans of the Cowboys and the Texans to mm-hmm. leak over and bleed over into the regional esports.
Something
team.
I want to point out is, like, 10 of these cities also already have Overwatch League teams. Mm-hmm. So that, there's a clear, like, you know, common ground there, and I think that's the reason why they also put those teams there.
What I do think is interesting is, like, teams like the Shock, like, they, their same ownership group is NRG, but their COD League is in Houston, or not Houston, but Chicago.
Huh.
So it's interesting to see what the, you know, how the breakup is, but I also wanted to kind of pose a question to you guys, is, like, what is the viability of a city-based model in esports overall? Because, you know, I think me personally, I gravitate more towards these players, and I develop kind of my organic relationships and affinities for certain players strictly through who they are, how they mm-hmm. play. It's not really any region-based thing like, you know, traditional sports.
Well, as someone who's kind of new to the esports scene, I am all about the city-based esports, because it gives me something to connect to, because, you know, as as we saw with the Shock, mm-hmm. San Francisco boys, I'm from the Bay Area originally, so I immediately gravitated towards them, and I supported them, and then I learned the players. So for me, especially for people who are now just getting into the esports, I think city-based stuff like that is more important.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, is you want to create a really great entry path for folks who may be new to the scene. But I also think it's incredibly important for the concept of sort of medium-sized to local sponsorship dollars as well. Because there's only so many, you know, Hondas and Toyotas and State Farms, these giant, huge, you know, national sort of companies. But I think when you tie yourself to a city, it makes it a lot easier. For some of those, you know, like Little Caesars, you can't tell me Little Caesars wouldn't want to be affiliated with whatever Detroit team if we ever had one. You know what I mean? You can't say that, you know, stuff like that. So I think that's another major play when it comes to city-based esports franchises as well. I think another big thing that we also need to continue to look at is, frankly, merchandise. Mm. And for as much as people want to go out and buy Cloud9 and TSM jerseys, that doesn't necessarily have the same amount of pull as having the colors of your city on your back. I think that's very different for a lot of people. And I think that's a very, very strong pull for a lot of folks. So I think it's viable, but I also think that it has to be done with a lot of caution as well.
I think the dichotomy is super interesting of, you know, where you have your balance of how much are you going to focus on bringing in and indoctrinating new fans of esports, and how are you going to service the people who kind of have been with this entire trend the entire time? As far as people following competitive Call of Duty, how are you going to service the people who have been in that space, you know, pre-existing, you know, a franchise-based model?
Regardless, it's going to be something to look forward to, this Call of Duty Global League.
Absolutely.
Most definitely. And as somebody who was a runaway fan, I became a Vancouver Titans fan, so that didn't necessarily change my feeling or my stance just because they changed their colors up a little bit. But we want to hear from you guys. Does Kevin have a point? You know, is the city-based regional system for esports, is it something that could work to the detriment of esports, or are you super excited about it and can't wait for your town to have an esports team, or can't wait to see your team from your hometown compete in Call of Duty? We want to hear from you. But we're going to talk a little bit about TwitchCon. I'm just back from TwitchCon. Not this week. It was complete. I have no idea what day it is. I'm completely running on fumes. But we're going to talk all about TwitchCon coming up on Checkpoint XP on campus. Hey, this is Norris Howard, your host for Checkpoint XP on campus, bringing you this clip of the week that's coming out of UT Arlington versus Arizona in Rocket League. This is an amazing dribble from Adverse.
The backboard, well, close to the net. It's been difficult to defend. Oh, Adverse, what a move! And he gets a fourth! What a play!
And this is where things start to look grim for Arizona. Adverse does the dirty to the Wildcats defense.
I'm sorry, that was sick.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP on campus. I'm your host, Norris Howard, and I am also incredibly tired because I'm just getting back from TwitchCon, an amazing, amazing streamer conference, convention, collection, all of the con words you can think of, out in San Diego over this past weekend. We were out there, Checkpoint XP proper, and I just wanted to let you know, it was great, and it sucks that you guys weren't out there. I'm going to be honest with you. It was absolutely amazing.
I am so, so jealous. I've been wanting to go to TwitchCon for a long time. I think I'm going to make the promise next year is going to be a goal to go next year.
Yeah, as two small affiliated streamers, we really should have a booth up there at TwitchCon just to meet all of our adoring fans.
Especially by next year.
Yeah, it's a shame that we haven't gone.
Listen, if you got affiliate status, man, you definitely should go because, I mean, the vast majority of the people that we saw there were community or affiliate. Mm-hmm. You know, partners were there, but it wasn't all partners. You know, we were there in a media capacity, but it was a lot of folks there who weren't necessarily there as the biggest, best streamers. But there were a lot of opportunities to get your face in front of brands, to maybe create some really cool partnerships. And I'm gonna put this out there. I'm just be honest. The parties were slapping. The parties were great.
I am jealous.
The parties were the best part. You go for the parties. There's no other. If you're not going to the parties, don't go. Flat out.
If you're not going to the parties, don't. I like that train of thought.
So, I mean, it's true.
Yeah. So with what would you say is like your biggest piece of advice for first time goers with TwitchCon?
So three pieces of advice. Number one, hand sanitizer.
I was gonna ask about
number
that.
Two, wash up every day. And number three, definitely make sure that you eat and take like emergency. Because, like, you don't want to come away with this whole thing with, like, con plague.
So I guess I could roll that.
I guess I could roll that into one and just say, like, take care of yourself. That would be number one. Number two, be open. Be open to talking. Be open to working with folks. You're going to be in a room with 50-50 split of people who are incredibly extroverted and people who are incredibly introverted. Be open to all of them. Be ready to talk to all of them. Be ready to collaborate. Be ready to have conversations. And most of all, be ready to have a lot of fun. Straight up. TwitchCon is a lot of freaking fun, man. So just be ready for all that. Those are the two biggest pieces of advices. That's not a word. Of advice that I would have for folks.
Did you meet any of your heroes while you were there? Any of your streamer heroes?
I don't meet my heroes. I got a hard line. Never meet your heroes. First of all, don't have heroes. Second of all, never meet them.
No. Second line is be your own hero.
Human beings will fundamentally disappoint you. Okay, and you walk away from it having lost respect for somebody that you really loved. So
wow.
You don't meet your heroes. You just go in and you say hi to your heroes, and then you move on.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do it, because, well, everybody's human, man. Oh. Everybody's human, man.
I was wondering if you drop a reference to that.
But no, it sounds like the trip was a really good time. Yeah. I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, we both are.
No, it was, and we want to get you guys out there. You know, for next year, it's going to be in San Diego next year. We're going to have a great time. It really is an immense experience, and if you're even, you know, tangentially involved with, you know, Twitch or streaming or anything like that, you should go, you should check it out, you know, take the time, spend the money, have a blast, because it's awesome to see a city completely overrun by a bunch of freaking nerds. It's really cool. But that's going to be it for this week on Checkpoint XP on campus. I want to thank all of the hard work from everybody out at UNLV, our desk hosts, Daniel Agbuye and Jacob Brothers. We also want to thank everybody in the background making things happen, lead production from Ethan Schneider, managing editor Kevin Kelly, as well as faculty support from Leslie Fitzsimmons, Ben Morse, and Jennifer Ream. We also want to thank our very awesome crew out here in Detroit, producers Joe Sloan and Chad Callahan. So we want to see and demand you to be back here next week for more Checkpoint XP on campus. See you later.
Love you.
Take care of yourselves.
And wash up.
And wash up.
Wash up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.